expanding block white capitals on a black screen. Perry Mason. The two words separate, revealing an empty courtroom. In white capitals, the case of the defiant daughter. Starring Raymond Burr, Barbara Hale, and William R. Moses as Ken Malansky. Special guest stars, Jair Burns, Robert Culp, Ken Kercheval, Kevin Tai, Robert Vaughan. Guest stars, John Apicella, Don Galloway, Harry J. Lennox, Jenny Lewis, John Posey, Michelle Scarabelli. Music by Dick De Benedictis. Original Perry Mason theme by Fred Steiner. Editor Carter DeHaven IV. Art director Paul Staheli. Director of photography Daniel McKinney. Producer Billy Ray Smith. Produced by David Solomon. Co-executive producer Joel Steiger. Teleplay by Anne Collins. Story by Dean Hargrove and Joel Steiger. Based on characters created by Earl Stanley Gardner. Directed by Christian I. Nyby II. The courtroom is wood panelled, with a polished green granite slab behind the raised judge's bench. On the slab is a circular plaque, with the words County of Los Angeles, California, around its rim. A team of doctors stands around a man lying in an emergency room.
Can I hook up the ventilator?
Here's
some more sponges.
Good.
All right, give me more.
BP?
50 over 90 and falling.
Blood oozes from a wound in his chest. A nurse leaves the room, passing a fretful man in his 40s who's waiting outside.
Dr. Cole to emergency staff, please.
I'm getting nothing. He's gone.
The man outside, wearing a pink Lacoste polo shirt, leans against a doorframe and pushes himself away over and over again. A doctor in a blue surgery coat comes out of the room, looks at the man in the pink shirt, and shakes his head. The man in the pink shirt thumps the doorframe. Later, the man in the pink shirt is in the bedroom of a house. He places a pistol magazine into a holdall on the bed, then picks up a black Beretta gun and puts that into the bag. He zips the holdall, picks it up along with a jacket, and heads out of the room. A girl of about 13 with long brown hair comes into an apartment building and climbs a flight of steps in the gloomy entrance hall. She goes to the first door on her left and unlocks it. In the kitchen of the apartment, she opens the fridge and takes out a jug of orange juice.
You don't have seat on the flight to Vegas?
Confused, the girl stops pouring the juice and walks into the living room.
5 o'clock flight's no good. I need to leave as soon as possible.
The man in the pink shirt's on the phone.
Oh, never mind. I'll drive.
His back to the girl, the man puts down the phone.
Dad? What's going on? How come you're home?
She walks towards him. He puts his hands comfortingly on her neck.
Uncle Peter is dead, Melanie. He shot himself.
Oh, God.
They hug.
You know, I got a call from a neighbor at work. He took him to the hospital and it was too late. You know, he didn't even leave a note.
Dad, you did everything you could. It's not your fault.
I know.
He scrapes her hair off her shoulders.
Listen, I want you to go to St. Louis and stay with your mother for a while, okay?
Why? I'm supposed to spend the summer with you.
No, but I gotta leave town. I can't leave you here by yourself.
Why do I have to go to Mom's? Can't I just stay with a friend or something?
No. Come on, help me out, all right? Your plane leaves at 6:45. What's your flight number? Get your ticket up at the airport. You know how to do that, right?
Yeah.
Now, a shuttle's coming to get you at 5:20. Here's some money.
He pushes cash into her hand, picks up the holdall, and kisses her. Now wearing a grey sports jacket over his polo shirt, he walks off. Stunned, the girl watches him stride to the door.
Dad.
Las Vegas. Letters on a huge hoarding read Billy Landau versus Woodrow James. The hoarding's at the front of the Desert Inn. Inside, a slim man in his early 40s with fair hair is at the hotel reception desk. Behind him is a large man with grey hair and moustache, Perry Mason.
Malansky, M-A-L-A-N-S-K-Y. Ken, there are two rooms. The other room's under the name of Mason. Perry Mason? My room overlooks the pool, yours overlooks the golf course. You're gonna have a terrific time.
I will if we change rooms.
But this is a hot ticket, you know. If I hadn't represented Billy Landau in his divorce, we never would have gotten ringside seats. Believe me, Perry, you're gonna love it.
Ken, relax. I will love it.
Would that be check or credit card, Mr. Malansky?
Credit card.
Yeah.
Ken gives Perry his case and suit bag.
I'll wait over there.
Right.
A thin man in his 60s walks up.
Perry, Mason.
Mr. Stewart.
Well, you in town for court or the fight?
Same thing sometimes. What about you?
Well, I hope to draw some blood at the poker table. I hold a private game here every year. You may have read about it.
Everybody's read about it. Or was that the whole idea?
Well, my guests don't complain. You'd be surprised what a little free publicity can do for a business or for a career. Perhaps you should consider joining us this year.
Thank you, no.
The man grins.
Enjoy the fight.
And wanders off. Ken.
All set.
They walk on.
Looks familiar. Who was that?
Bridget Stewart.
PR guy?
Yep.
Friend?
Nope.
Perry stops as he realizes he's carrying Ken's things and piles them and his own things into the arms of his friend. He pushes Ken onwards and smiles contentedly. At the reception desk, the man in the pink shirt spots Richard Stewart as he walks past.
Just thought I saw an old friend of mine. Richard Stewart?
Mr. Stewart is a guest.
Still having his famous poker game?
I really couldn't say, sir.
The man walks down a corridor, his hold all in one hand, a bottle in a paper bag in the other.
You were going to sneak off and eat these when I wasn't looking, weren't you, Martin? All 300 calories, all 840 milligrams total, 15...
They're just peanuts, for
no,
crying out loud. Maybe I was saving them for you.
Oh, maybe I'll take them.
The man watches the couple walk past. He raises his eyebrows incredulously as he unlocks the door to his room. Later, he sips from a tumbler of whiskey held in his left hand. He puts the tumbler down on a table and sits on the bed, reaching into his holdall and taking out the gun. He draws the firing mechanism back to cock it and pulls the trigger. Satisfied, he takes the magazine from the holdall. The lights of Las Vegas illuminate the night sky in a gaudy display of flashing colored shapes. A neon cowboy waves. Glittering signs read Westward Ho, Dunes, Golden Goose, Horseshoe, Mint, Glitter Gulch, Casino. In his hotel suite, Richard Stewart takes a couple of cards out of a deck and puts them in a wooden box containing casino chips. He wanders into a large sitting area where three men are waiting, including a grey-haired man with a big silver belt buckle. Two waiters leave.
Gentlemen, looks terrific. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, dig in. Can't play poker on an empty stomach.
Well, you can, but it's not as much fun that way, I can tell you that. Hey, look, you know, I don't know why you fellows are so upset with the Japanese. Their money is just as green as everybody's.
You know, if they had run the oil business the way they did at ours, you'd think differently, too.
No, you automobile boys, you dropped the ball.
You know, as fascinating as all this is, why don't we just get started?
As soon as Cliff gets here.
He was late last year, too. Man's totally irresponsible. Probably takes drugs, you know? All those showbiz people do.
And they used to accuse me of making gross generalizations.
Senator, listen, when you were in office, nobody could figure out what you were saying.
A blonde man.
Hola! Housekeeping.
Sorry I'm late, gentlemen. I had to sign about 100 autographs on my way to the elevator. Some guys won't do it, but somehow I just cannot say no.
So I hear.
Yeah, are you still in that TV sitcom where you play the wrestling coach in that girls' school?
Hey, it's our eighth season. What can I say? I'm not complaining, but there is nothing like the laughter from a live audience. Present company accepted.
The man in the pink shirt kicks open the door, his pistol aimed at Stewart.
David Benson. Peter Benson's brother. Remember Peter Benson, don't you?
Stewart backs away.
Oh, yes.
He committed suicide today.
The fat ex-senator gets up.
Yes, I was told.
Yeah. You know, because of you, he spent the last 2 years watching everything that meant anything to him go down the drain. You put that bullet through his head.
Bartell, the actor, creeps up behind David.
So now you're gonna
put one through mine. Is that the idea?
You damn right I am.
I'm very sorry about what happened to your brother, David. But he shot himself because he was emotionally unstable. I know that. You know that. This isn't going to solve anything. I don't think that you really want to pull that trigger.
Bartell jumps in. The ex-senator disarms him.
Hit him where it hurts the most when he least expects. That's just like a politician.
At least I wasn't just standing there.
Get me security.
Jay, get off the phone.
50-something Jay Corelli.
Hang up.
Brown-haired Jay puts the phone down. Stuart empties the gun magazine.
I'm going to give him back what he came in with.
Stuart puts the gun in David's pocket.
And then I'm going to suggest that he go. And I'm going to pretend this never happened. Right, David?
Bartell pushes David towards the door and he leaves.
Richard, don't you think you should report this to the police?
I don't want him involved. I don't need that kind of publicity.
No, none of us do.
Oh, I'll drink to that.
Let's play poker.
Bare-chested, David lies on his hotel room bed.
Hello?
Too bad you didn't pull the trigger, David.
Who is this? How'd you know about it?
I've got something on Richard Stewart that you could use to great advantage.
What are you talking about? What?
Be at the north end of the Desert Grand parking lot in 20 minutes and I'll tell you.
Taken aback, David stares at the floor as he replaces the receiver. Later, he paces anxiously between a couple of cars in the car park. He's wearing his grey jacket with a green polo shirt underneath. A woman in her 30s with shoulder-length blonde hair and large pale green eyes walks cautiously up behind him. David checks his watch.
David Benson? Hi. I'm Jennifer. Sorry I'm late. Look, I can't talk long. How would you like to see Richard Stewart go to prison?
I'd love it. Who are you?
I used to be his mistress. I heard things, lots of things. You know, about the way he does business, people he does business with. Anyway, I quit my job for him and he put me up in this real nice condo. Then about a month ago, he drops me, just like that. Left me out on the street. I want to get even.
So why don't you just go to the police?
Look, Stewart cut me off with that, isn't it? No, he left me drowning in bills. I just need some money.
How much money?
About 20,000.
What?
Hey, your brother's dead because of Richard Stewart. I'm giving you the chance to put him away here.
Yeah, but I don't have $20,000.
This is Vegas. It's pocket change to people around here. Get it. I'll call you tomorrow.
She strides off.
Wait a minute.
David watches as she gets into a yellow VW Rabbit convertible, reverses, and drives away. The roof of the car folded down, headlights blazing. An oval bath with a high marble surround filled with bubbles. A woman in a pink crop top and flowing skirt with her hair done up checks her appearance in a mirror. Stuart, wearing a black silk bathrobe, stands watching her. She walks over to him, takes the champagne glass he's been drinking from, and takes a sip.
It's on the table.
He pats her flat stomach and she walks over to the bed, which is a few yards away from the bath area. She puts the glass down on a bedside table, takes something from the table, and leaves. Stuart picks up another champagne glass from the bath surround and drinks from it. He stares ahead in serious reflection as he swallows his drink. The door of a room next to Stuart's suite opens, and someone looks out into the dimly lit hallway. Reflected in a mirror on the wall, the woman leaves Stuart's suite. The person moves out of the room and heads towards Stuart's door, stopping to watch the woman disappear down a corridor. A hand reaches out and unlocks the door to Stuart's suite. The wrists are covered by white shirt cuffs poking out from a dark jacket. The door is pushed open and the person treads slowly towards the bath. Stuart stares at the person, puzzled.
What are you doing here?
He puts down his glass. The intruder pulls out a pistol. Stuart's face freezes. An explosion of white leaps from the gun, and Stuart falls onto the bed, leaving a bloody mark on the white cover before tumbling onto the floor. David's lying on his bed, eyes shut. Opening his eyes, he checks his watch and gets up, smoothing down his khaki-coloured trousers before going to the door. His young daughter's outside.
Melanie?
Dad, it took me $5 worth of phone calls to try and figure out which hotel you were staying in. Next time, just tell me, okay?
Why aren't you in St. Louis?
Well, I heard you say you were going to Vegas, so when I got to the airport, I changed my ticket.
Melanie.
Dad, you really scared me. I had to find out what was going on.
I haven't been much of a father lately, have I?
They sit next to each other on the bed.
When Peter died, I just lost it. I was so angry, I just wanted to kill Richard Stuart. I had a gun pointed right at him, but I couldn't do it.
And I would have had to live with Mom and her boyfriend for good, right?
He smiles.
I'm sorry, I spent too much time worrying about Peter.
Well, he was your brother.
Yeah. I'm sorry, sweetheart, I'll make it up to you, okay?
He checks his watch again and furrows his brow before heading to the door.
I'm Detective Sergeant Hollenbeck. This is Officer Parsons, Las Vegas Police Department. Are you David Benson?
Yes, I am.
Hollenbeck looks at Melanie.
It's my daughter, Melanie. What's going on?
Can we come in?
Hollenbeck and the uniformed officer walk in.
I understand you own a 9mm Beretta.
Yes, I do.
You have it with you?
Yeah.
May I see it?
Yeah.
David walks over to his jacket.
Why do you want to see his gun?
A man named Richard Stuart was shot and killed in his room earlier tonight. Find it, Mr. Benson?
David stiffens.
No? I didn't think you would. All right, you're coming with us. Take her to juvenile hall.
Melanie's gone.
Where the hell did she go?
Hollenbeck hares into the corridor and looks left and right.
Are you aware that Richard Stuart was murdered last night?
Very aware.
Who told you? The police?
The waiter who brought my coffee.
Have you formed an opinion?
Just one.
Now look, Mr. Mason is here for the fight. He has nothing to do with this case. Now please, just leave him alone.
Perry opens the door to his suite and steps inside, a leather document case in his left hand. He heads towards a dining table, but stops suddenly as he spots Melanie asleep on the beige sofa to his right. Confused, he walks over to her.
Miss? Miss?
Melanie leaps to her feet.
What? I'm sorry I fell asleep. I'm Melanie Benson. I got the maid to let me in. I hope that's okay. I thought if I waited for you in the lobby, I might miss you. I have to talk to you right away.
About what?
About my father, David Benson, the guy they arrested for murdering Richard Stuart. He needs a lawyer, and since everyone says you're so good and all, and since you're in town anyway, I thought I'd hire you. So, let's go see my dad, okay?
She heads for the door.
Hiring an attorney is not quite the same as ordering a pizza, Miss Benson.
Oh, well, if it's the money thing you're worried about, my dad will pay you whatever you want. Though it would be kind of nice if you could, break it down into, you know, installments.
Did he send you here?
This was my idea.
Young lady, this town is full of attorneys who are not just here overnight, you might say, whose schedules are infinitely less hectic than mine. Why don't you try one of them?
No, but you don't...
And make an appointment first. Breaking and entering tends to create a less than favorable first impression.
Her face falls.
Perhaps the concierge in the lobby will help you.
I don't need the concierge. I need you. My father was framed. The cops think they have an open and shut case. He doesn't need just any lawyer. He needs the best, and I was told that's you.
You were misinformed. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. But I've a lot of work to do. I think you'd better go.
Sitting at the table, he starts to write. Melanie stomps to the door, opens it, and then looks back, her brown eyes shining.
They also told me the reason why you're the best. It's because you care about justice. You just keep on going and going until you find out the truth. They didn't tell me you only did it when it could fit into your hectic schedule. Of course, the truth is, my dad is practically broke, and he probably doesn't have a chance no matter who defends him.
She swallows.
So never mind. Sorry I interrupted you.
With a derisory snort, she turns on her heel and marches out. Melanie takes up residence on a low windowsill at the end of the corridor. Perry slowly approaches.
Let's go find your father.
She turns round to him, tears streaming down her face. Perry offers her a white handkerchief, which she takes. She stands, and Perry puts his arm round her.
I want the handkerchief back.
She starts to smile as they walk off down the corridor. Perry's with David in an interview room.
My brother was an attorney, one with a conscience. One day he decided that if he was going to change those things around him that he didn't like, he would have to get involved, run for political office, which he did. And according to the polls, he would have won. Only his opponent fired his campaign manager and he brought in Richard Stewart, who immediately discovered that Peter had seen a psychiatrist several years earlier, after his wife had died of cancer.
And he made it public.
Hell, he made it the central issue of the whole campaign. Every day he would leak out small rumors concerning Peter's emotional problems to the press. By the time that election rolled around, he had everybody believing that my brother was dangerously incompetent.
Sounds like Richard Stewart, all right.
Perry's at the table. David paces.
You know, he discredited my brother so well. He not only lost the election, he lost his whole law practice. One by one, his clients dropped him. Everybody turned away.
Except you.
David shakes his head.
Let me put it this way. Peter supported the family. He made sure I got through school. I owed him everything.
Just how bad did it get for your brother?
Bad. First he started drinking. And he started using. No, I tried to get him to stop, but he just shut me out. I tried to help him all I could. You know, it cost me my marriage.
David pulls out a chair and sits down.
Jeopardized my career. For nothing. He wound up killing himself. All because of Richard Stewart.
This woman named Jennifer you were meeting with at the time of the murder, what can you tell me about her?
You know, she was young, blonde, medium build. She drove a little yellow convertible.
License plate?
I didn't see it. Then there was a sticker on the front windshield, on the driver's side. It was blue with pink numbers on it, like a parking permit.
Not much, but at the start.
You know, I still can't figure out whether she was for real or whether she's part of this whole frame.
Well, in either case, she's your alibi. Your only alibi. The sooner we find her, the better.
You mean you're taking the case?
You want me to?
David looks down, a little embarrassed.
Of course. Look, I don't know what Melanie told you, but I can't possibly pay you much.
I didn't know your brother, Mr. Benson. But I've known a lot of people like him. People who were not just defeated by Richard Stewart's smear tactics, but destroyed by them. I haven't appeared in a Nevada court for 20 years. Maybe it's time I did again.
Ken's with Hollenbeck.
Her weapon was found in one of the dumpsters behind a hotel about an hour after the murder.
Not a very smart place to dispose of a murder weapon.
They join Perry.
Maybe your client isn't so smart.
More likely, somebody stole that gun from his room when he was out, then put it in the dumpster after the murder, knowing that's the first place you'd look.
Nobody stole that gun from Benson's room, Counselor. And he wasn't rendezvousing with any girl in any parking lot either. I've got a witness who says that at 20 minutes after 1 this morning, that's approximately 5 minutes before the shot that killed Stewart was heard, this witness saw
David Benson in the hotel.
That's not possible.
Hollenbeck hands Perry a file.
Here's his statement.
Perry, his eyes fixed coolly on Hollenbeck, gives it to Ken. Smug, Hollenbeck turns and walks off. Ken follows him, leaving Perry to his thoughts. Perry wanders off and finds Melanie thumping a vending machine.
Lose your money?
No, I never put money in these things. Usually if I just hit it once or twice, it hits
something. Here. Use money. People around here prefer it that way.
Melanie takes the coins with a shrug and feeds them into the machine. Perry stands watching as she presses a button to make her selection. Perry looks on in disbelief. Melanie giggles. Later, she's in his suite surrounded by food.
We're getting here so fast, I give you a big tip.
She signs the bill, which the waiter takes with a smile, and goes to the door, which he opens to a woman.
Oh, excuse me.
She's in her 60s.
Hello. I'm looking for Perry Mason.
He's on the phone. Who are you?
Della Street.
Oh, you were the one who called this morning. Mm-hmm. You got here fast. Want some lunch or something?
No, thank you, dear.
Della?
Yes.
Della Street? Melanie Benson, our client's daughter. Is there anything on the menu you didn't order?
I need my strength.
Yes, I know. The hotel owner has agreed to let us have this suite for the duration, so go ahead and set up whatever equipment you need. Your room's right over there.
Okay. I'll change and set up right away. Do you think we'll need a fax machine?
We'll need to check out four men. They were with Richard Stewart when David Benson threatened him.
He hands her a notebook.
Thank you. Names?
L.D. Ryan, oil man and real estate developer from Houston. Stephen Elliott, used to be a U.S. senator, now he's a lobbyist. Jay Corelli.
President of the Corelli Car Corporation.
Cliff Bartel. Actor.
She nods at Perry.
Cross-section of the rich and famous.
They were all clients of Richard Stewart.
You think one of them killed him?
That would be my guess.
Well, where's Ken?
In Stewart's suite. I'm just going to join him. Until her father is out on bail, we're going to have to keep an eye on her. Just for a couple of days.
Della throws up her hands.
All right. She seems very sweet.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
She eyes grinning Perry suspiciously. Ken's in Stewart's suite with a team of detectives.
You can see those bullets, please?
Ken's handed a bag of bullets, which he takes to Perry.
You were right. Police found these in the wastebasket. 14 bullets. The gun holds 16, but they say the gun could have been two bullets short to begin with.
And they say Benson brought extra ammunition.
Right. There you go.
Ken hands the bullets back to a detective.
I also found out that one of the nightmaids was dismissed this morning for losing her passkey. She says it was stolen off her cart last night.
So that's how the killer was able to steal David's gun.
And how he was able to get into this suite and kill Richard Stewart.
Ken, find the woman who was with David at the time of the murder.
What about that eyewitness the police have?
Worry about him.
A sour-faced woman in her 50s approaches an officer at the door.
Guess that means we'll be selling our tickets to the fight tonight.
No.
I'm Sarah Andrews. I was Mr. Stewart's personal secretary. Detective Hollenbeck said it would be all right if I collected Mr. Stewart's things.
Go on in.
Thank you. Excuse me.
We won't have time.
Ken goes out. Dressed in a long peach-colored jacket and black dress, Sarah Andrews packs things from beside the sink into a leather toilet bag, which she then puts into a suitcase.
Sarah Andrews? I'm Della Street, Perry Mason's secretary. He's the attorney who's going
Yes,
to...
I know.
I was hoping you could tell us about the four men who played poker with Mr. Stewart the night he was murdered.
Why?
Because we suspect one of them was the murderer.
I thought the police already had the murderer.
Sarah, all of Richard Stewart's records are subject to a subpoena. You could be compelled to testify.
Is that some kind of threat?
I just want you to understand, I know how unpleasant that could be for you.
Sarah looks away, a little shocked.
How long were you with him?
Sarah glances back at Della.
31 years.
Della, in a grey-green blouse and pearls, steps closer to her.
I've been with mine over 40.
Sarah regards her carefully.
I know what it's like to devote your life to your job. To one man.
Sarah looks sadly down.
Are you married?
No.
He was once, but it didn't last. He could be difficult, even mean. But he was always good to me.
What you had with him was like a marriage.
Sarah nods.
He was probably the closest person in the world to you. I know how terrible it must be for you to lose him.
You can't imagine.
Oh, yes. I can imagine.
Sarah turns to Della gratefully. Perry's sitting looking at documents in his suite as Della returns.
How'd it go?
Well, I was not very truthful with her.
Della, you are never not very truthful.
She smiles.
Well, I certainly was not very truthful this time. But I am going to have dinner with her tonight before she leaves. She's a very nice woman, Perry. It's a hard time for her.
I'm sure it is. Let's go. We've got that bail hearing.
Well, where's Melanie?
In there, going deaf.
Melanie! I don't believe it. She's asleep.
Perry takes out earplugs.
Melanie!
David's sitting at the front of a courtroom.
That's it. It's just like the one that was on Jennifer's car.
Sticker for employee parking at the Desert Grand.
Nice work. As soon as we're through here, I want you and Ken to sit down with the police composite artist and come up with a sketch of Jennifer.
No problem.
A young bespectacled man comes in.
You must be Harry Mason.
He shakes Perry's hand.
Keith Warner. Sorry I'm late. Traffic was impossible. It's a pleasure to meet you, sir. I've heard a lot about you.
The judge stares down.
Nice of you to join us, Mr. Warner. Now that the prosecution is here, let's proceed to the matter of bail. Does the state wish to make any recommendations?
It does indeed, Your Honor.
Keith steps up to a stand.
The defendant has been charged with first-degree murder. That's a very serious charge, Judge McKelvey.
About as serious as they come.
So whether he is guilty or not, it is only logical, if not mandatory, that as responsible officers of this court, we assume that he will at some time or another consider fleeing from prosecution. Which means that we are duty-bound, sir, to ask ourselves, what's to stop him? And the answer is nothing. This man has no family here. He has no roots to this community. No real assets or any money anywhere. Even if he were able to post bail, he'd feel no obligation to honor its terms. He has nothing to lose. What I'm saying, Your Honor, is if there were ever a case where bail should be denied, this, without a doubt, is it.
Does counsel for the defense wish to make a statement?
Yes, Your Honor, we do. My client has never been arrested before, has never even been detained before. Contrary to what the state contends, he doesn't want to flee the charges against him, he wants to face them. And in view of the fact that he is responsible for his teenage daughter, and she is here with him, the risk of his leaving this jurisdiction is minimal. I request that bail be set no higher than $10,000.
The judge swings in his seat.
I have to go along with Mr. Warner on this one. Request for bail is denied. The defendant will remain in custody until time of his trial. Next case.
Dad, what's going on? Are they going to keep you in jail?
It's all right. I'll be okay.
They hug briefly before David follows a guard.
David, I am sorry.
David leans towards Della.
Can you see that Melanie gets to her mother's okay?
I will. Melanie.
I'll see you in court, Counselor.
Keith breezes out, leaving Perry dissatisfied. Ken holds a door open for Della, Melanie, and Perry, who file into the lobby area.
Well, you better get packed. It looks like you're going to St. Louis.
I'll book a plane.
My mom's not there. I talked to her a couple of days ago. She and her boyfriend left for the Far East. I won't be able to get in touch with her for at least a month.
You mean you didn't tell her?
No, I didn't want to worry her. I guess it looks like you're stuck with me then, huh?
Perry turns to Ken.
I wouldn't have come to Las Vegas if it weren't for you. I wouldn't have stayed here if it weren't for you. But that doesn't mean I'm stuck with you. No, indeed.
Melanie's shoulders droop. Perry stalks off. Della takes Melanie's arm and guides her to the doors. Ken accompanies them, shaking his head. In Perry's suite,
Richard Stewart had his clients tell him everything, past and present. Anything could harm their public image. That way, he could hide their skeletons in the closet.
That means each of our four suspects trusted him with potentially damaging information.
Sarah said his relationship with all of them was stormy, to put it mildly. But he trusted her implicitly. Would you like to read something about Cliff Bartel's deep, dark secrets?
She opens a file. Melanie peers over his shoulder.
What about the others?
I'm still typing up my notes.
Perry turns to stare disapprovingly at Melanie.
What?
What? This doesn't concern you.
Well, this concerns my father. I want to know who framed him.
When we find out, you'll find out.
Well, I can help you find out. I can follow people. I can spy on them. I can do whatever you want me to do.
Not at the moment, thank you.
Well, I want to do something. My dad's in jail, and I just can't sit here doing nothing.
Is that a menu?
She hands him one. He takes it, opens it, and hands it back to her.
Order something. When it gets here, this time, chew very slowly.
Unamused, she heads off to her room. Della buttons her lip. Perry gets to his feet.
I'm going to talk to Bartel.
Oh, he's in room 518.
No, I just saw him in the lounge. I'll be there if you want me for anything.
You'll need this.
She hands him a file as he heads out. Melanie overhears. She shuts the door to her room, waits for a moment, and then heads out through another door into the hallway. In a darkened cocktail lounge, a blonde is singing on stage.
You'd be so nice to come home to. You'd be so nice by the fire.
Bartel's on his own at a table watching.
While the breeze on high sang a lullaby.
Mr. Bartel, I'd like to ask you a few questions. Name's Perry Mason, David Benson's attorney.
Oh, sit up.
Perry does so.
You want a drink?
No, thank you. She's very good.
Yes, so they say. Can I get another one of these, please? So, what kind of questions did you want to ask me?
Easy ones. Like, where were you at the time of the murder?
Why are you asking me that?
You were one of the last people to see Richard Stewart alive.
Someone put you onto me?
No, should they have?
I left a poker game and I came straight down here. Like you said, she's good.
Alone?
Hey, look. If it weren't for Richard Stewart, I'd still be playing the comedy club circuit, so why the hell would I want to kill him?
Because of Maynard Tobias, perhaps?
Who?
The man who was driving your car when it hit that nice young couple from Indiana and killed them. The man who's currently serving time for felony manslaughter.
Right. That was awful. How did I know he was going to go out and get drunk that night he borrowed my car?
Interestingly enough, because it was a hit and run, no one actually saw who was driving your car.
What are you getting at?
It occurs to me that perhaps you were driving and that Richard Stewart paid Tobias to take the rap for you in order to save your career.
That is a lie. And if you start spreading it, I will sue you off the face of this planet.
Don't worry. If the check I'm running on Maynard Tobias reveals that he's come into any major assets since he's been in prison, I'll be very careful about whom I tell. Well, thank you, Mr. Bartel.
Perry places a subpoena in front of Bartel.
I will be talking to you again.
A waitress places a drink in front of Bartel as Perry leaves, and the blonde takes her applause. Melanie peers around a corner, staring at Bartel. as a man in a grey-green suit walks up to his table.
Who was that?
Oh, great. First a lawyer and now you. Is this my lucky day or what?
Hey, be nice. I'll drop by to let you know that everything's on for tonight.
Next time, use the phone. I can't be seen with you right now.
The man looks down his large nose at Bartell.
Goodbye.
The man raises his eyebrows and swaggers away. Bartell turns to stare at the blonde. In a gaming area, a man fishes coins out of a polystyrene cup and drops them into a slot machine. Melanie walks past, coming to a stop as she meets Perry.
Wait till I tell you what I just overheard. This is really good stuff.
I'm sure it is.
He takes her hand with a smile and leads her back to the suite where Della's sorting papers.
What in the world? I thought she was
she
in a
room. She is going to be there from now on.
But I told you something big is going down tonight involving Cliff Bartell.
Melanie, I would like you to go to your room.
I can help.
Either you go to your room, or you go to a deep, dark dungeon. Now take your pick.
He releases her hand, and she troops petulantly off.
She's just worried about her father, Perry. She's only 13. Maybe you should go a little easier on her.
You got it backwards. Well?
Della bristles.
Here are the rest of your reports. Oh, and Ken dropped by with this.
He opens a file to reveal a drawing of Jennifer.
Sketch from the police, Ernest.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Jennifer.
Right.
Perry looks up pensively.
Call Ken. Tell him to keep an eye on Bartell tonight.
Ken's in a car park talking to a woman. A sign shows the temperature, 111 degrees.
No, I haven't seen her. You might try personnel.
I already did. Thanks anyway.
Okay.
Ken takes the drawing.
Excuse me. Do you know this woman?
Sure don't.
I think she works here.
Not on our shift.
All right, thanks. Excuse me.
At a bar, Perry finds ex-Senator Stephen Elliott.
Hello, Senator.
Perry Mason.
Yes. We met several years ago at a reception in Washington. You have a good memory.
Yes. Of course, I'm aware of the fact that you're defending the man who's accused of murdering Richard Stewart.
Mind if I ask you some questions?
Depends on the questions.
I understand you played poker with Richard Stewart only hours before his death.
Yes, is that significant?
Only if you can't account for your whereabouts after the poker game ended.
Well, I suggest you ask my fellow players to account for their whereabouts. You get much more mileage out of their answers, I guarantee you.
Why is that?
Because I was at a floor show here at the hotel between 12 midnight and 2 a.m. I was with Gerald and Amanda Stearns, two old friends of mine from L.A.
Speaking of old friends, what do you hear from Sharon Bennett?
Elliot sips his drink.
Sharon Bennett?
She worked in your office as a page one summer. She was a junior in high school then.
Yes, yes, of course. I haven't spoken to her in years.
Who paid her to just disappear like that, you or Richard Stewart?
I beg your pardon?
I'm sure it was one of you. After all, you were married, you were on the Senate Ethics Committee, she was a minor. Had your constituents learned about her pregnancy and subsequent abortion, your political career would have been ruined.
You know, I don't have to sit here and listen to this.
And even now, were details of your affair with her to be made public, I doubt you'd be much in demand anymore as a spokesman for political causes.
Is that some kind of a threat?
Oh, no. I don't make threats. I just give good advice. And if you know more than you're telling, you'd be wise to tell me rather than a court.
Next time, Counselor, bring a subpoena.
There won't be a next time.
Perry holds one up. Elliot takes it and strolls off, leaving Perry suddenly thoughtful. Outside, the huge sign advertising the fight, which juts from the front wall of the hotel a few stories up, is illuminated in brilliant white. In a corridor, Ken stops beside the open door to Bartell's room. Inside, Bartell is on the phone.
The police are not going to hassle me. Because they already arrested some guy. I don't know. As far as they're concerned, the case is closed. No, I am not going to use you as my alibi. I got to go. I really do. Okay, I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah, I love you too.
He tips a maid.
Oh, here. Thanks.
The maid heads to the door and Ken scoots away. Bartell watches the maid, who's holding some towels, leave while he stubs out a cigarette. Bartell then leaves, shutting the door to room 518 behind him. He pushes open the door to the emergency stairs nearby. From behind a corner, Ken spies on him. As Bartell steps into the stairwell and climbs the first flight of steps, Ken goes to follow him. Bartell steps out onto the roof, which is shrouded in darkness. The man in the grey-green suit is waiting for him, smoking. Without acknowledging Bartell, he turns and walks away. Bartell walks after him. Ken pushes open the door onto the roof and gently closes it behind him, before creeping over to a corner and peering round it at the two men, who are now talking. Ken darts alongside the wall, out into the open, running towards a chimney which he crouches behind. On all fours, he scampers like a monkey over to another outlet pipe sticking out of the flat rooftop. He stares out at Bartell and the man in the grey-green suit, who are now talking to a thick-set man with a moustache. A gun's pushed into Ken's back. Slowly, Ken gets up. Swinging round suddenly, he lashes out at the man behind him and tears off, but as he approaches the door, he runs straight into another man, who punches Ken to the ground, picks him up, and pins him against a wall.
Suppose you guys know how to find the pool.
All right, everybody free!
Hollenbeck.
You! Drop your weapon now!
A chopper.
This is the police. Throw down your weapons and step away.
Police swarm onto the roof.
You're under arrest. You have the right to remain silent. Give up this right, anything you say can and will be used against you.
Ken slumps against the wall in exhausted relief. The outside of a white Art Deco police station. Inside, Detective Sergeant Hollenbeck and Perry step out of the cell block.
You and your people always hang out with drug dealers, counselor, or were you just soliciting new clients?
I don't have to advertise, Sergeant. Cases seem to find me.
Ken joins them.
You're lucky we were tailing those creeps, or you would have wound up in the parking lot hit first.
Too bad they didn't have the drugs on them.
You're telling me. They're all gonna walk.
Bartell walks past.
Mr. Bartell. Don't you think it's time you explained what you were doing with those four?
I don't have to explain anything, but I will tell you this. I was with them the night Richard Stewart was murdered. They're my alibi.
He goes.
He's lying. He was with some woman at the time of the murder. I heard him talking to her on the phone.
L.D. Ryan is taking the red eye back to Houston tonight. It's my bet he'll be in the casino until he leaves. If I miss him, we may not see him again until the trial. Get the car for us, will you? It's out back.
L.D. Ryan, the loud man with the large silver belt buckle, is playing blackjack.
Woo! There we go.
He's dealt two aces, which he splits. He gets a queen and a jack, and the bank goes bust.
All right. That's the way I like it. I like my money up front and in cash. Isn't that sweet? You want to get in on some of this action, my friend?
I never gamble with money.
Well, that's all I ever do. That's for you now. I got me a thing to get.
Mr. Ryan, I'm Perry Mason.
Mm-hmm.
David Benson's attorney. I'm the one who left you all those messages today.
Is that a fact?
It certainly is. Why didn't you answer?
Well, now I'll tell you, I think the hotel must have screwed up because the only message I got was from my CEO telling me to get home pronto. See, somebody is ready to sell me some land and I've been real anxious to get.
I have a few questions for you concerning Richard Stewart.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you talk to the police? Because them and me, we had a very thorough discussion about Richard about a couple of days ago.
Did you tell them about the time you fired Richard Stewart and hired him back 2 days later?
What's that got to do with anything?
It has to do with the $27 million you made when Royal Dutch took over Fenway Oil. You made that money because somebody at Fenway Oil gave you inside information. Richard Stewart knew that. When you fired him, he threatened to tell, so you hired him back.
Anyway, that isn't the truth. I hired him back because when I went out there looking for another publicist, I found out that he was the best there is. And that's been years ago.
Insider trading is still a very serious allegation. And you have even more to lose now than you did then, which means that this time, when Richard Stewart threatened to go public with what he knew, you couldn't afford to take any chances.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you saying that I killed him?
Where did you go after the poker game that night?
I got it. To bed.
Yeah. Alone?
I'm a happily married man. At least I was that night, anyway. Now, look, I am a tin angel compared to the other three guys in that game. Now, I have plane to catch.
Here's something for you to read on that plane.
A subpoena. Ryan takes it with a scowl and walks off. Perry leans on the blackjack table and watches him go. Sunlight glints off the tall, glassy front of the Desert Inn. Ken strides into Perry's suite and heads over to Melanie, who's sitting on the sofa listening to a Walkman.
Hey,
He's carrying a book.
Hey, bought you something.
What is it?
What does it look like? It's a book.
What's it about?
I don't know. The lady at the gift shop recommended it. Where's Perry?
He's out tracking down Jay Carelli. You got something?
Yeah, I finally got a lead on Jennifer. Nobody could ID her picture. But I started talking to somebody who told me the car she was driving looks a lot like one that belongs to a woman named Alice Sherman. She used to be a blackjack dealer at the Desert Grand. Quit about 6 months ago.
Did you talk to her?
She's out of town. Won't be back until tomorrow.
Any idea who the mystery woman is?
Not yet.
Melanie gets up, interested.
Mystery woman?
Yeah, when I was tailing Bartell, he was talking on the phone to some woman. Promised to keep her out of all this.
Do you think she could have done it?
It's hard to say. So this?
Oh, Sarah sent me copies of Richard Stewart's tax returns for the last 5 years. I wanted to see if he claimed any winnings from his annual poker games.
Melanie fiddles with her hair.
I ordered some food. I'll be in my room if you need me.
All right, dear.
She goes to her room. Ken furrows his brow.
Richard Stewart won $325,000 in this poker game?
Mm-hmm. He didn't do badly in 1988 either. Look at this.
Della hands him a document. Melanie, in black t-shirt and shorts and beige sleeveless cardigan, crawls across her bed and picks up the phone. She presses a button.
Yes, Cliff Bartell, room 518, please. Oh, well then, can I leave a message? Just tell him to come see me right away. It's an emergency. We have to talk about last Friday night. No, that's okay. He'll know who it's from. Thank you.
She dashes to the door, opens it, and runs straight into the room service waiter in the corridor outside.
Can you cancel my order? Something came up, okay?
Della.
Right there.
Yeah. Just a second.
Ken puts down the document as he heads to the door. The room service waiter's outside.
The young lady ordered this, but she just left. Melanie! I gotta find her.
In a bar area overlooking gaming tables, Perry wanders over to Jay Carelli.
Thinking of buying the hotel, Mr. Carelli?
I'm always thinking of buying everything. Sometimes I do. I don't think we've ever actually met, but I'm keenly aware of your reputation, Mr. Mason.
And I with yours.
Carelli sips his drink.
An ugly rumor that says you're representing this psychopath that murdered Dick Stewart.
No, I represent David Benson.
Meaning you don't think he's a psychopath? Meaning you don't think he's a murderer?
Oh, neither one. In fact, I was wondering if murder had something to do with the DLX-7 Carelli sports coupe.
DLX-7 is ancient history, Mr. Mason.
Not if what some people say is true.
Which is what?
That you knew about the problem with the anti-locking brakes all along, but chose to ignore it in order to meet a deadline.
Carelli glances away from Perry's stern stare.
That would have been criminal negligence. And it would have been wrong.
Which is precisely why, when people started dying as a result of the faulty brake system, Richard Stewart paid whomever he had to, whatever he had to, in order to cover it up.
That's slander.
Only if it's untrue. But if it is true, and if Richard Stewart and you had some kind of falling out that led to his threatening to expose you, it would certainly give you a strong motive for committing murder.
Just who have you been talking to? Those three losers who were at the poker game that night? Now, if you want to make your life a little more interesting, do some homework on that.
Where did you go after you left them that night?
Down to the casino.
Were you with anyone?
Lady Luck was with me.
Be sure to bring her with you.
Perry hands him a subpoena and then heads off. An unamused Carelli watches him go. Bartell strides through a dark, empty lounge area, the same area in which he watched the blonde singing on stage. He strides past the tables, making his way to a dressing room door beside the stage.
Ben.
He goes inside. Melanie stands at the entrance to the lounge watching. She scampers across the lounge and climbs up on a bench seat, peering over its padded back into the dressing room. In a mirror, she sees Cliff and the blonde locked in an embrace.
I'm not complaining, mind you, but what brings you here?
You said it was an emergency.
They kiss tenderly.
That was an emergency.
Did we talk about what happened on the night of the murder? You left me a message.
She stares at him, confused.
No, I didn't.
Melanie gets down. Bartell hears something and leans back to look out of the door. Melanie creeps over to the door. Bartell motions for the blonde woman to keep quiet as he tiptoes out of another door and then comes up behind Melanie. He grabs her.
Whose little girl are you?
In the suite.
How could she get out with both of you here?
Stuff was coming in on the fax machine. I guess we got a little distracted. Perry, I have looked all over the place. Della has security looking for...
Outside and inside.
Perry puts down the phone as Ken marches to the door. Bartell pushes Melanie in.
Mason, you had better put a leash and a muzzle on this kid, because if I see her again, I am going to sue the lot of you for harassment.
I know where he was the night of the murder. He was with that singer, Belinda Foster.
Would you do something about her?
I think they both killed Richard Stewart. That's exactly what I think.
Melanie, that is enough. We need the truth, Mr. Bartell.
You know who Sam Shuba is?
Crime boss from Chicago.
Yeah, well, these days he kind of commutes. You see, he considers Belinda to be his girlfriend. And if he finds out about her and me, I'm going to be taking a very long, cold swim in Lake Mead. That's why I lied before.
Will Belinda Foster corroborate your story?
Yeah, of course. But look, there's really no need for anybody else to know about this, is there?
No guarantees, Mr. Bartell. A man's life is at stake. Though we'd more likely cooperate with you if you cooperate with us.
I am cooperating.
So you are. Well, I want to know what really went on at those poker games.
Okay.
And we need the truth, Mr. Bartell.
Bartell glares at Melanie. Perry takes a deep breath.
Will you excuse us for a moment?
Perry leads Melanie by the hand into her room.
Come on, I've got a right to listen. If it weren't for me, he wouldn't even be here.
I want you to sit down.
She sits in an armchair, and he sits in front of her.
I know you're trying to help, Melanie, but you've really got to stop what you're doing.
Why?
Because none of us can do our job properly when we have to constantly chase after you. We worry about you.
So, don't worry about me.
She gets up.
We also worry about your father.
She freezes.
Now, I want your word that you'll do exactly as I say, or I won't be able to give your father a proper defense.
Yeah, but... what if he goes to prison? I mean...
Pleadingly, she walks towards Perry.
We've got to do something about this. I've got to do something. I'm really scared.
I know.
She sits on his knee.
I know you are. But it's going to be all right. The two of you will soon be going home together.
Promise?
Promise.
Peter walks towards him, holding David's black Beretta pistol.
Sergeant Hollenbeck, I am showing you a 9mm Beretta, which has been marked People's Exhibit Number 8, and which your department's ballistic expert testifies was the murder weapon. Do you recognize it, sir?
Yes, I do. That is the weapon which was found in the dumpster behind the hotel in which the defendant was staying.
And did you ascertain to whom this weapon was registered?
Yes, it is registered to David Benson, the defendant.
Thank you, Sergeant Hollenbeck. Nothing further.
Keith replaces the gun on a table.
Your witness, Mr. Mason.
Perry's reading a document.
Mr. Mason.
Della hands him a piece of paper.
Sergeant, did you see Mr. Benson put People's Exhibit Number 8 or any other weapon in the dumpster?
No, sir, I did not.
During your investigation, were you able to locate one, just one witness that saw Mr. Benson put something into the dumpster?
No, sir, I was not.
Thank you, Sergeant Hollenbeck. That will be all.
Hollenbeck gets up.
Oh, Sergeant. I...
Hollenbeck sits back down with a look at the judge.
Nothing further.
With a dark glance at Perry, Hollenbeck leaves the stand. Perry shuffles some papers and then watches Hollenbeck walk out of the courtroom.
The people call Mr. Martin Hockman.
The tubby balding man, who's not allowed to eat peanuts, takes the stand.
We played blackjack in the casino until about midnight, and then my wife...
She waves.
...said she was tired and went upstairs. I gambled some more and then went upstairs too.
Did you see anything as you went upstairs, Mr. Hockman?
Well, I got off the elevator on the 23rd floor and had just started down the corridor to our room when I saw someone come out of a room a few doors down and head for the fire stairs.
You that person in this courtroom today?
Yes, sir. That's him right there.
He points at David.
Let the record show that the witness, without hesitation, pointed directly to the defendant. Did you happen to have noticed what time it was when you saw him, sir?
Yes, sir. It was 1:20 a.m. I had just looked at my watch.
So he was right there in a hotel corridor at 1:20 a.m., and he was not out in a parking lot rendezvousing with some mystery woman.
Objection. Mr. Warner's question is cumulative, compound, and argumentative.
Withdraw the question. You saw the defendant at 1:20 a.m. in the hotel corridor, is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you. I have nothing further.
Mrs. Hockman grins at her husband.
Mr. Hockman, you say your wife went upstairs around midnight?
That's right, yes.
So you were in the casino for about an hour and 15 minutes without her?
That's also right, yes.
Doing what exactly?
Gambling. Blackjack, mostly. Some craps.
And drinking?
Oh, no. I had a mild heart attack about a year ago, so I'm on a very strict diet. No fat, no salt, absolutely no alcohol.
How often do you come to Las Vegas, Mr. Hockman?
2, maybe 3 times a year. My wife and I both like to gamble.
Intend to wager large amounts of money?
Nothing I can't handle.
Aren't you considered something of a high roller?
I suppose.
That means you get special treatment by the hotel and the pit bosses, doesn't it?
They take very good care of me, yes.
And very good care includes non-stop free drinks to high rollers while they're gambling.
I have seen them do that, yes.
So you were in the casino receiving and consuming alcoholic drinks provided by the house?
Absolutely not. My wife and my doctor would kill me if I was drinking alcohol.
Ms. Reynolds?
A woman stands.
You recognize her, Mr. Hockman?
I'm not sure.
Please, Mr. Hockman, look again. She's wearing the same cocktail waitress uniform that she was wearing in the casino where you were gambling that night.
Well,
You stood out that night, Mr. Hockman. You certainly stood out. You gambled and lost close to $60,000 and consumed at least 3 double scotches in less than an hour and a half, didn't you?
He looks shaken.
Yes.
I ask you once again, were you drinking that night?
Yes.
Thank you, Miss Reynolds. You may sit down. When you got off that elevator at 1:20 that morning, you were feeling the effects of those drinks, weren't you? In fact, you were drunk, weren't you?
Yeah, I think I was.
In that condition, you saw someone coming out of Mr. Benson's room, is that right?
Yes.
But you don't know whether it was David Benson or some other person who'd stolen Mr. Benson's gun and was on his way to kill Richard Stewart.
Oh, wait a minute, please. Objection. Mr. Mason is now arguing his case and using unfounded speculation to do so.
Sustained.
That next morning, Mr. Benson's picture and an article on the murder were in the morning paper. Did you see that paper?
Yes, I did.
Now, didn't you just assume that Mr. Benson and the person you saw were the same?
Maybe I did, Mr. Mason.
Mr. Hockman, can you honestly tell us you saw David Benson in that hotel corridor?
No. No, I can't. Sorry.
Thank you.
David smiles.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Taking off dark glasses, Ken walks up a concrete path towards a house. He knocks on the wooden front door. A woman with fair bouffant hair opens the door.
Hi, your name Alice Sherman?
Yes, who are you?
My name's Ken Malansky. I'm looking for this woman.
He shows the drawing.
You recognize her?
No, I don't.
So you're seen driving a small yellow convertible. You have a car like that, don't you?
Well, I used to, but it was stolen about a month ago.
You reported to the police?
I believe my husband did. You know, if you don't mind, I gotta get ready for work. I'm sorry I couldn't be more helpful.
Alice, who's in her 30s, closes the door. Ken turns away. In court, Bartell's in the witness box.
You knew Richard Stewart for how long, Bartell?
About 8 years.
Was your relationship strictly business?
Strictly business. To tell you the truth, I didn't like him very much.
What about the other men at that poker game? Did they like him?
Objection.
Whether they liked him or not, Your Honor, is irrelevant to our inquiry here. Mr. Mason is putting the victim on trial.
If the court will bear with me, the relevancy of this line of questioning will soon become clear.
Overruled. Witness may answer.
They didn't like him either.
If none of you liked Richard Stewart, why did you all fly to Las Vegas to play poker with him every year?
We flew to Las Vegas. We didn't play poker.
What did you do?
Richard Stewart was blackmailing us. We'd each show up for the game. We would each write him a check for $75,000. We would sit around for a while, and then we would leave.
The poker game was just a front.
Correct. He would deposit the money in the bank. He would declare it as gambling winnings, pay taxes on it, and invest it, spend it, whatever.
How long had this been going on?
About 5 years.
Did you enjoy being blackmailed?
Why would I enjoy paying someone to keep his mouth shut about something that I wished had never happened in the first place?
So for the four of you, Richard Stewart's death was somewhat of a blessing.
You said that, Mr. Mason, not me.
Thank you. No further questions.
Keith.
No questions.
Alice, wearing white high-heeled shoes and a pink and white striped dress, walks along a concrete path and pulls the handle of an off-white up-and-over garage door. She walks into the gloomy garage and gets into the driver's seat of a yellow VW Rabbit convertible, dumping her brown shoulder bag onto the passenger seat. She reverses out of the garage into the bright sunshine and drives off down the road. Ken's waiting in a dark grey-brown Ford sedan opposite her house. He starts his engine and follows her. The small yellow VW, with its roof down and a Desert Inn parking permit in the windscreen, turns off a main road and into a motel car park. Alice pulls on the handbrake, turns off the engine, and checks her appearance in the rearview mirror before getting out of the car and heading towards one of the yellow-painted motel room doors on the ground floor. From his car, Ken watches her knock on the door. As she's let in, Ken parks near the VW and gets out of his car. He hurries towards a chambermaid who's wheeling a trolley piled with sheets and towels.
Excuse me. I got kind of an emergency here. I left my wallet and my key in that room over there. I was wondering maybe if you have a passkey or something I could use.
Yeah, but I need it.
Great. Thanks a lot.
No, I need that.
Don't worry about it.
He unlocks the door that Alice went into. Inside, she's sitting on the bed with a big hairy guy in a vest.
I thought Jennifer would be here.
Get out!
What's going on here? You know this guy?
No, he's some creep who...
Well, I knew you were lying
film.
About the car.
Are you a cop?
No, I'm not a cop.
Got it!
The man punches Ken, is thrown back out of the door, and collapses on top of the laundry trolley. The chambermaid grabs her key back.
That's just my way of saying, don't be here, we come out.
Ken writhes on the ground in agony. Back home, Alice gets out of her yellow car, leaving it outside the garage. She heads up a short flight of steps to the back door. Ken darts around the corner and runs after her.
Now that you're back from work, I thought maybe we could talk.
Will you go away? Will you get out of my house?
Tell me who was driving your car the night Richard Stewart was murdered.
She picks up a yellow wall phone.
All right, yeah, go ahead, call the cops. I'll just tell them about your part-time job.
You can't prove one damn thing. Yes, someone's broken into my house. I need the police. Oh, never mind. I'm sorry. I made a mistake.
Hi, honey.
A man comes in the front door.
Hi. Thought you'd still be out shopping.
Nothing was on sale.
Ken walks towards them.
Who's this?
This is Jim Johnson. He sells insurance.
So's my cousin, Ted. So I'm afraid we won't be needing any.
That's what I told him. He was just about to leave.
Well, I'm going to go change. We've got dinner tonight with Bob and Mimi at 8.
As he wanders out, Ken laughs.
You told him you were out shopping?
Get out.
Either you tell me where the woman is who was driving your car that night, or I tell your husband how you really spent this afternoon.
Alice fingers an eyebrow defeatedly. Later, Ken's at the front door of a vast 1960s house, showing the picture to Jennifer.
Looks a little like me, doesn't it?
Alice Sherman told me you borrowed her car that night, Jennifer.
My name isn't Jennifer, it's Stephanie.
Look, I know you were with David Benson the night Richard Stewart was murdered. I don't know why you lied about your name then or why you're lying now. But you can bet one way or another I'm going to find out.
With an uneasy frown, Stephanie, wearing a leaf-patterned dress, shows Ken inside. They come into a wide hallway where a boy of about 6 is playing with a bat and a ball.
Skip, not in the house.
The boy runs off. Ken looks round as he follows Stephanie into a huge open-plan living area, modern art hanging on the high cream-coloured walls, green palms growing in large pots. Stephanie stares out of a window at a patio.
When I heard Richard Stewart had been murdered, I got scared. I asked Alice not to tell anyone I'd board her car that night.
You must have known you could give David Benson an alibi. Why didn't you come forward?
Because I didn't want to get involved.
She turns to him and smiles.
You obviously don't have kids. Otherwise, he'd understand.
Why'd you tell David your name was Jennifer?
Because I didn't want it getting back to Richard Stewart that I was the one willing to sell him out. He held grudges in a big way.
Ken eyes her carefully.
So what happens now?
I get you a subpoena, you go to court, you tell the truth.
She winces.
For his sake, I'd get it over with.
Ken walks out. Stephanie looks round at her young son playing, and then stares into space, troubled. Bartell strolls into a courtroom, followed by Ken and Melanie, who's wearing a smart blue and white striped jacket.
So, which one is Stephanie?
She's not here yet.
How do you know she'll be here?
Because I told her I'd do this if she didn't show.
He pinches her nose.
Dad!
She runs to David as he's brought in.
Big girl.
Yeah. Mr. Mason says after that woman testifies, he's going to ask for a dismissal.
Right.
David takes his seat next to Della at the defense table. Della's jaw drops as she spots Ken escorting in Stephanie, looking striking in a slim-fitting black dress and a wide-brimmed black hat. She approaches the witness box.
Ms. Young, the night Richard Stewart was murdered, do you remember where you went?
Yes, I took a cab to a friend's house. My car was in the shop, and she was letting me borrow hers. I got the car, I picked up some ice cream, and I went home. I ate the ice cream with my son, and then I went to bed.
What happened later that night?
Nothing.
Perry's eyes widen in amazement. David leans forward.
You called David Benson later that night, did you not?
No.
Perry glances round at David.
You called him and asked him to meet you at the Desert Grand Hotel parking lot.
No, I didn't.
Ms. Young, I feel obliged to remind you that you are under oath and warn you that the penalty for perjury in this state is extremely severe. Now, weren't you with this man at approximately 1:15 a.m. in a downtown parking lot on the night Richard Stewart was murdered?
I've never seen that man before in my life.
David buries his head. Melanie stares down glumly. Perry picks up the drawing.
Well, if that is true, why does the police drawing of the woman David Benson was with that night look exactly like you?
I have no idea.
And why does his description of the car she was driving match the car you borrowed?
I don't know.
But I do, Ms. Young. It's because you aren't telling the truth. You are lying.
Objection.
You lied when you told my client you had information for sale. You lied just now when you denied ever talking to him. And the reason you keep lying is because you're helping whoever did the murder frame David Benson.
Your Honor, now, I object to this.
I have nothing further.
Objection sustained. Mr. Mason.
Yes, Your Honor.
I have been very patient, sir. Did you say you have nothing further?
Oh, yes. It's not often that I'm forced to impeach my own witness.
That's it?
Perry shrugs.
That's it, Your Honor. And thank you.
He sits down.
This examination.
No, that won't be necessary, Your Honor.
You may step down.
Thank you.
Putting on an expression of annoyance, she gets up and heads between the defense and prosecution desks on her way out. Ken watches her, and then leans over Perry's shoulder.
Don't let her out of your sight.
Ken heads out. Night, downtown Las Vegas awash with bright illuminations. In a silver-gray open-topped Mercedes, Stephanie drives along Fremont Street and parks outside the Golden Gate Casino. Ken parks his car on the opposite side of the road. Stephanie gets out of her car and stands on the pavement, looking around nervously. As she checks her watch, she glances across the road and spots Ken's car, the lights still on. Wearing a gold lamé jacket with the sleeves pushed up to the elbows over an olive green top, she heads off down the street. Ken clambers out of his car and gives chase. Stephanie strides through the crowds. Pulling on his black suit jacket over his grey striped white shirt, Ken follows her at a distance. Stephanie hurries into a casino, heading down the aisle between two rows of slot machines. As she turns a corner, she looks round, spots Ken as he comes in, and she dashes off. Ken frowns and stops. Blowing out his cheeks, he pulls down the knot of his black tie and loosens the collar of his shirt. He then turns back towards the entrance. Stephanie peers out from the end of the row of slot machines and stares at the entrance. Seeing no sign of Ken, she dashes out onto the pavement. She walks quickly back the way she came, and then turns down a dark alleyway. Ken appears from behind a corner, keeping a watch on her as she stops in the alley and waits. She looks back up the alley, and Ken hides himself behind the corner. Suddenly he notices a car careering across the road, heading towards the alley. Stephanie stares aghast as the car plows into her. As the car powers away, Ken runs over to Stephanie, lying on her back, blood oozing from her mouth.
Stephanie!
Skip!
Her eyes close. Her head lolls. Ken's in the suite.
It was the same person that killed Richard Stewart. Had to be. Killed Stephanie to cover his tracks.
Did you see the driver?
No, the headlights were in my eyes. I couldn't even tell you the color of the car.
Did she say anything to you before she died?
Just her son's name.
What is her son's name?
Well, nickname, I think. Skip.
Skip? Let me see those photographs.
Della hands them to him.
Della, what do we do with those faxes?
Oh, wait.
We can finish that discussion another day. We have a whole long night ahead of us here. Here. Take some more.
He hands out piles of photographs. Next day in court, Keith leans into a microphone on the prosecution desk.
Your Honor, sir, I believe we provided the defense here and Mr. Mason with more than ample consideration. But he's very, very late, sir, and I'd like to request...
Your Honor, my associate, Mr. Mason, has been unavoidably delayed. We expect him here at any moment.
Excuse me, but Mr. Mason is here.
Mr. Mason, you surprise me, and you're very late.
Perry's shirt is open.
I am sorry, Your Honor. Last night we received new evidence, and it has taken all of the night and most of the morning to prepare it so that it could be presented to this court, I must ask the court's forgiveness for our appearance and my great tardiness.
Mr. Mason, Mr. Warner, this court is known for its punctuality. Do not let this happen again. Understood?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Mason, are you ready?
Just 3 minutes, Your Honor.
Elliot takes the stand.
Senator, how long had you known Richard Stewart?
He started doing public relations for me during my second campaign for the Senate, which was back in 79, 11 years ago.
How long had he been blackmailing you?
5 years.
In 5 years, you paid him close to $400,000 not to reveal certain indiscretions that would have ruined your career. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, Senator, your income has decreased substantially over the past 4 years, has it not?
I suppose.
Perry takes a box from a woman.
Wasn't it getting more difficult each year to pay Richard Stewart?
I managed to.
Ken holds a check.
Senator Elliott, we are showing you a check marked Defense Exhibit D for identification, apparently drawn on your account. And we ask you if you can identify it.
I gave this to Richard on the night that he was killed.
We subpoenaed your bank records at 7 a.m. this morning, Senator. You knew when you wrote that check that it was no good. But you also knew Richard Stewart would never live to try to cash it.
I won't dignify that accusation with a reply.
Senator, did you leave the show that night?
No.
Ken takes photos from the box.
The two people you were with, Amanda and Gerald Stern, remember you leaving?
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I do remember. I did leave for a minute or two. I went to the front desk to check and see if I had any messages, and then I believe I went to the restroom.
He smiles.
Just the desk?
Perry takes some enlarged photos over to him.
And then the restroom.
Yes.
This is a photograph marked Defense Exhibit E for identification taken that night by the hotel photographer. That hotel photographer. Do you remember her?
Yes.
The woman stands.
You remember that photograph?
I remember it vividly. Jerry Stearns threw a fit when he saw this. It's a terrible picture. He had another one taken.
This photograph, marked Defense Exhibit F for identification, is the second photograph taken that night, is it not?
Yes, and it's a much better picture.
More than that, Senator. And photograph number one, you're wearing a shirt with cufflinks. And photograph number two, your shirt has button cuffs. You changed your shirt, Senator. You went upstairs. You killed Richard Stewart. And you changed your shirt. Because your shirt had his blood all over it. Isn't that true?
No.
No?
Elliot shakes his head. Perry walks over to his desk and takes a pile of papers from Della. He turns back to Elliot.
No?
Elliot, in a gray suit, white shirt, and maroon tie, shifts uncomfortably. Perry paces back to the witness box and leans towards him.
Tell us about your connection to Stephanie Young.
There is no connection.
Your corporation has been sending her an $8,000 check every month for the past 6 years, yet you say no connection. That night she lured Benson away from his hotel for you, yet you say no connection.
Perry's eyes blaze.
At 1 o'clock, you left the show, stole a passkey from a maid's cart, went to David Benson's room, stole his gun. Then you went to Richard Stewart's room, and because he knew of your connection with Stephanie Young, you shot him dead.
That is not true.
Perry turns with a frown and takes a couple of steps away from the stand.
You have a nickname, Senator. What is it?
Skip. Some people call me Skip.
He tries to smile. Perry walks back over to him.
Stephanie Young gave birth to a son 6 years ago. She called him Skip. He's your son, isn't he, sir? You sent Stephanie monthly checks to support him and to make sure she kept very quiet. Richard Stewart heard about that son and decided to up his blackmail. You were afraid Stephanie would ask for more. You could no longer afford to pay them more. So you killed them. Simple.
Perry shakes his head.
You just killed them.
Elliot remains motionless, his eyes moistening.
I had no idea what I was going to do to him. That guy arrived in the room, he's carrying a gun. And then, as you say, it became simple. It was going to be so easy without the two of them milking me dry. I was going to be able to take care of my boy. Had it all figured out.
His brief smile fades into a harsh glare.
Simple. I just killed them.
He stares into the distance. Perry blinks. Keith rises to his feet.
View of these developments, Your Honor, the state moves that all charges against the defendant be dismissed.
So ordered. Bailiff, take Mr. Elliot into custody. Case dismissed.
Melanie runs up to David and throws her arms around him. Smiling broadly, Ken gets up and shakes David's hand.
Congratulations.
Stunned, Jay Corelli remains seated in the public gallery as others around him get up. Elliot glances coldly at Perry as he's led away by a guard. Ken, Della, David, and Melanie join Perry in the courthouse lobby.
Thank you. Thank you both for everything.
Thanks for putting up with me.
You take care.
They gather round Perry, who's holding an envelope.
Della, just because I snuck out on you didn't mean that I don't like you.
I do know that.
Perry.
Property section kindly brought me your gear. I'm sure it's all there.
He hands him the envelope.
Well, goodbye, you two.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
David and Melanie walk towards the doors. Melanie stops.
Wait one second. I'll be right back.
She walks back to Perry. He looks up a little surprised. Melanie opens her mouth and struggles a little to get the words out.
I just wanted to thank you. You kept your promise, and I'll never forget you. Never.
Perry smiles warmly and hugs her to him. Ken and Della watch happily as Melanie turns and goes back to her father.
You know, she wasn't so bad.
Easy for you to say.
Della rolls her eyes at Ken, takes his arm and walks off. Perry stares after David and Melanie.
No. Easy for me to say.
He remains thoughtful. ITFC audio description by Mark Leavesley.